This episode is brought to you by AIHA Publications. Tired of lugging around heavy reference books? All of AIHA's best-selling publications are now available for purchase in PDF format, offering a convenient way to view, search, bookmark, and comment on publications directly from your computer or mobile device. Visit AIHA.org/PDFPubs for more information.
Summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirty and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here.
Welcome to Safe and Sound. I am Craig Sorrell, and Catherine Grandstaff, why did you bring an inflatable pool in here?
As you'll find out soon enough, it is hot outside.
Yes.
And
yes,
I was looking for an indoor pool, and so I brought it to the office.
Yes, that more offices need indoor pools, so bring the inflatable kiddie pool.
Meanwhile, my productivity has shot through the roof. I've got my feet in the pool, I'm working on some press releases, it's all good today.
Man, I tell you, this weekend, though, it got really hot all of a sudden.
It was like, hello, summer.
Yes.
There you are.
Summer came, and summer arrived with a vengeance.
Oh, wow. It's so warm outside. And, Craig, you know me. You know I'm a freeze baby. So when I say it's warm, you know it's hot outside.
Yeah, and I think we're in some trouble if the lack of winter that we had here in Virginia and the last weekend, which is kind of the kickoff of summer, was that hot. We're in a lot of trouble.
I think we're going to have to prepare for a warm one.
Yes, and preparing is the best thing that you can do.
Well, speaking of preparing.
Oh.
I have a guest for you today.
Is it the manufacturer of kiddie pools for office cubes?
Close. Someone who actually could tell us a little bit more about summer and how to stay cool.
Okay.
So today we have Dr. Jeffrey Pellegrino on. Now, he is from... What? My alma mater, Kent State University, and he works with the faculty and professionals there to enhance their emergency prevention, preparedness, and response curricula.
Ah.
Now, specifically, Dr. Pellegrino has been working with the Red Cross for 35 years on health, safety, and disaster services. So we're talking about someone who's not only involved in the academia side of training, but also the technical professional side of safety planning.
So he teaches it and he's hands-on.
Yep.
So he really knows what he's talking about here.
It's the best of both worlds.
Awesome. Our favorite kind of guest.
Do I have to get out of the kiddie pool? No?
No.
Okay.
No, you don't. But I would love to, ask a couple questions about some myths about heat and heat safety.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a reason why there's so many organizations out there releasing heat safety fact sheets, because it's not as simple as just drink water.
No, or Slurpees.
Oh, which, well, Slurpees are delicious.
They're delicious, but not necessarily a substitute.
No, they're not. So right now, to talk about some heat safety and how to prevent heat-related illness, we'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Jeffrey Pellegrino.
Hello, Dr. Pellegrino.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, thanks for coming on, and, we had to have you on because this weekend was a holiday weekend, and it was extremely hot here in Virginia. And
it was hot here in Ohio, too.
And, let's get this out of the way, because I know people just want to crank up the AC and just sit inside, but that's not always the best thing to do. And
I don't know why he's pointing to me as he says that.
As the mercury rises... I think some people still use mercury thermometers, right? And we want to go outside more. What are your top three tips for staying cool when it gets hot out?
Well, it's probably cliche, but to say be prepared, be prepared, be prepared. But I've been a scout leader for the last 20 years and working with a whole bunch of other organizations. There are so many things that you could do to be prepared. Things like being physically fit. The healthier you are, the better apt you are able to deal with the exercise that you're going to be trying out. I don't know if you knew this, but it takes about 7 days to sort of get acclimatized to hot weather. So these early weekends in summer can be a real stickler for people.
Yes.
Being prepared physically for the day, staying hydrated and dressing appropriately. and then being prepared to chill out. You know, if you plan your day, know when you can take your breaks and where you can take them. Those are some really important ways you can stay cool and stay healthy during the hot weather.
So, Dr. Pellegrino, you said there's a 7-day window at which it takes your body time to adjust to the weather.
Right.
How long does that window apply to whining about the temperature? Is that the same?
Well, talk to my 8-year-old. A little bit longer. Go to the pool, Daddy.
Now, during these warmer temperatures, we hear that you should drink plenty of water. But what exactly is plenty, and is there a mathematical equation to figure out if you're drinking enough?
Right. So, yeah, there's some recent research out about that notion of drinking sort of 8 glasses of water a day that your mom probably told you about.
Yes.
But when you start to apply that to the whole population, it doesn't work. So people are different sizes, plus we have different diets, and so there is no magic formula. Food is a great source of water, and when you think of fruits and vegetables, as opposed to like chips that have no water in them. So then you have to take a look at the exercise or work you're doing, and obviously you're going to evaporate more water when you're exercising or in the hotter weather, so that changes the amount of water you need each day. So you need to replace the water that you're losing, and so there are some pretty basic body tips that says you should drink water, like when you're thirsty. But if you also notice you have a headache or cramping, or if you have some dark, potentially smelling urine or a dry mouth, then you need to drink something. You can also think about if you're going out to exercise or do some work, to prehydrate. And that, you know, there's some sort of guidelines from that we get from the athletic training folks. So if you start hydrating about 4 hours ahead of time, about a half a cup to a cup every 20 minutes, that should get you up to shape for when you're actually starting to exercise. And, of course, you need to replace it while you're exercising, too. And then for the chocolate milk lovers in the community,
who doesn't love
chocolate
milk?
Really good studies about chocolate milk having some really good benefits for recovery. And a lot of that has to just do with the liquid part of the milk.
Awesome. And chocolate milk goes well with all the deep-fried festival foods that start right about now.
I love a good corn dog.
I wonder what the new state fair food will be this year.
Whatever it is, it's fried.
Absolutely.
Well, I do have a question, though, about, you know, you said prehydrate, but how do you know if you're drinking too much water? Because I know that actually can be a problem, too.
Actually, it could be life-threatening. So we are finding, the term is called hyponatremia. And it's when your body has too much water in it, which means it dilutes the salt, and the salt's sort of what helps the electrical system in our body. So we need to make sure that we're not drinking too much water. And the biggest clue for that is your urine really clear? And are you peeing a lot? Okay, so that means we're well hydrated. So we need to be careful, and we can find out, maybe not find out, but you can observe people if they're sort of getting into this hyponatremic state by their change of behavior. And it's been referred to as like water intoxication or drunkenness because it mimics those signs.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. And so we see this a lot in sort of weekend warriors who are out there doing like marathons. Maybe not properly trained. They think they need to hydrate, so they drink a couple of gallons of water the day before. And then they get out on the course and they drink during the stations, and then you start to see them wobbling and falling. And
wow.
And their judgment's off. I mean, their balance and things. So, but once you start to talk to them, you find out they've been drinking a lot of water, they're peeing a lot, and those are pretty much the signs of hyponatremia, which can be life-threatening. So how do you avoid it? You eat while you drink. So we have plenty of salt in our American diet, I think. So, actually, another thing we've learned from those marathons, if you hand out, can I say Doritos?
Yeah.
Because they're so high in salt. If those are with the water stations, people are suffering less from hyponatremia.
26.2 miles and a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos.
And a bag of Doritos. Cool Ranch, alternate it. Yeah.
I think we have a new marathon trainer in the studio right now, Craig.
Well, I want to talk about some things because you said a couple of things that came across that Catherine and I have talked about that are facts or they're fiction.
Oh,
and
Is it that time?
Love playing this game because it's things that we hear from people or have heard while we were working. And okay. You let us know if they're fact or fiction, okay?
All right, I'll work on that.
All right. The first thing is, since we were talking about hydration, after you've been out in the heat sweating and you have been drinking lots of water, you should take a salt pill to replenish the salt you lost in your sweat.
Yeah, I think as you just heard, we have plenty of salt in our American diet, so I'm calling that fiction.
Okay.
We used to do that back in the Industrial Revolution time. They used to have salt tablets next to water fountains, but that's no longer the case. Our diets have plenty of salt in them, as long as you're eating while you're hydrating.
And why take a salt pill when you can eat Doritos?
Oh,
All right. The next one. The temperature in the location I am at has to be in the triple digits before I can suffer from heat-related illness.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, that does, and I'm calling that fiction right now. So, heat-related illnesses have many factors. That include your health, of course, your exercise level for the day, and maybe even previous. And then the ambient temperatures and humidity also contribute to it. So it's a whole bunch of combinations, and you can see people, as long as the temperature is above your normal body temperature, you have the potential of taking in more heat.
Oh.
Now, I have to ask this one because I'm kind of really hoping it's fiction, but I have to ask it anyway. When you're working out in the sun, wearing as little as possible is the best way to stay cool.
I don't think the people at our pool totally realize this. it's a fiction. So, I mean, if you think about the sort of the two concepts, you want to keep the sunlight off of you. So wearing light loose clothes and a big hat really helps keep that direct radiation off of you from the sun. And then there are often clothes that work better in the heat, and they promote evaporation. They pull the wetness, you know, from your sweat away from your body, which draws the heat. So it's fiction.
So, Craig, you can forego the bikini top for now.
All right.
Ooh, thank you.
All right, our last one for fact or fiction. Putting a cold compress on the back of your neck is more effective than drinking water to cool down.
Ooh, good question.
That's not fair, Craig. So the cold water doesn't actually lower your body temperature significantly or very fast. So, and not a single cold compress on the back of your neck is going to lower your body temperature. You know, early in the game of heat emergencies, you could use either of these to help, you know, get back to normal body temperature. So they're both valuable early, but neither of them are going to be adequate in a late heat emergency.
Okay.
So it's really important that you don't rely on those. So, you know, if you're just hanging out, you know, yeah, go ahead and use those to sort of maintain yourself. But if you start to see somebody with some of those signs and symptoms of heat emergencies, you need to be thinking how to do something a little bit more quick, I guess.
Okay.
Now, Dr. Pellegrino, we have listeners that are working out in the field, and many of them have to wear personal protection equipment. Do you have any tips for those workers on how to stay cool when they're wearing the PPE?
Yes. As a person with some experience in fire and EMS, I know the reasons why we need personal protective equipment and want to make sure that, you know, as we're talking, people don't modify that equipment. It's there for a reason. We need to make sure, though, it's not to our detriment either. So things that you can do, think about the gear as looking at new gear, the new types of fabric that, again, help evaporate and wick moisture away. And so having the right and newest equipment might be helpful. It's also really important that you start to think about how do we improve safety from a cultural perspective with the heat, because it's hard to recognize the signs and symptoms. And so thinking about working smarter, meaning placing your materials closer, venting in closed spaces, or providing shade in open spaces are all things that we can do when we're wearing our personal protective equipment. And so those are things that would keep people safer.
Great.
I know when I worked out in the field, the mist tent was like the greatest invention ever. I love that thing.
Sure.
And you mentioned overheating. And when you're out there with coworkers, how do I know if any of my coworkers are overheating? Are there any symptoms to the heat-related illness that I should look out for while we're out there?
Yeah. So when we're thinking of signs and symptoms in first aid, signs are what we can see happening in ourselves or in other people. So early signs, if we think of heat emergencies sort of on a continuum, would be an early sign would be wet, cool skin because our body's still trying to get rid of that heat. People might be have some feelings or vomiting or feeling nauseated. And then later signs might include some changes in behavior. People aren't acting the way they normally do, whether that's a little bit more hyper or a little bit more low-key. And then this is where it's really important. This is where that culture of safety really fits in. Late signs, you know, when we're starting to get into heat stroke is what the term is used. If you see anybody, you know, who's starting to have a seizure or change in their level of consciousness, meaning going down, or their skin is hot and red, or rapid shallow breathing or that rapid weak pulse, those are all signs that our body's getting too hot. Most of the time we don't have a thermometer, but we're looking at body temperatures like 104 plus.
Oh, wow.
At that point. And that is life-threatening.
Wow. Dr. Pellegrino, if you find yourself or a coworker a victim of heat-related illness, what is the best way to recover?
Okay. So, again, if we look at that continuum, if we can catch it early, we can help our body reset its temperature back to normal.
Okay.
And we can do this by just removing the person or ourselves from that heat source. So that means going inside if you're out, probably, or outside if you're in something, you know, confined. Loosen that restrictive clothing. Use that, you know, hot, cool pack on the back of the neck. Make sure you stay hydrated.
Got it.
Now, those are there's a really good chance at recovery for that. And that resting time will help bring you back to normal. What happens when our body gets too hot, it starts to shut down. It goes into a shock type of scenario, and it's trying everything to do to cool off, but it can't. So something's broken. A thermostat's broken on the inside. So, you know, once we hit that 104 temperature, we need to think of actively cooling that person. And this is something that's where cool water immersion or cold water immersion is really appropriate after you call 911. Or your local emergency number, because this is a life-threatening condition. We need to cool that person off as quickly as possible. So, again, sort of what we've learned at marathons is having a kiddie pool full of ice water and literally dropping people into it.
Wow.
Now, you have to be careful, because this person is, again, their behaviors change, their ability to manage their airways change, so throwing them into a river or a lake has some risks to that. But literally, dousing the person with cold water. If you don't have that, a lot of water, because you're out in the field in a low water environment, splashing it on there, fanning them, getting those heavy tight clothes off, getting them in the shade is really important. Air conditioned car, whatever you can do, but cooling them off as fast as possible is really important. Again, after you notify your local emergency number.
So putting them in all of a sudden into that icy water will help? That doesn't put their body in
Absolutely.
Shock?
Absolutely. It's our quickest way of cooling down the body.
Okay.
And it's because the body can't maintain the temperature itself. It needs help. And if you think, once you get to that 105 degree, you remember those commercials that this is your brain on drugs and they drop the egg in the frying pan?
Yes.
It's the proteins in your head that are starting to cook.
Oh.
So
oh, wow.
I don't know if I can make that any more visual for you.
No,
that's like
threatening.
Visual.
So we want to take care of each other.
Well, one of our last questions we have for you, we have lots of employers that, you know, they have their workers that work outside in the summer months. What can employers do to ensure that their staff doesn't overheat?
I really want to encourage that development and that reward of a culture of safety and watching out for each other. Heat emergencies are almost totally, they don't have to exist. We can prevent them. And so if the employers and the crews themselves work to take care of each other by rotating individuals or crews from different experiences. You know, maybe you don't need to be out in the sun for, you know, 2 hours at a time, but you can rotate every 25 minutes or so with another group. Having some different protocols for different weather types, meaning, you know, if you look at the heat index, you know, maybe there's a protocol for that over 90 degrees to 100 degrees, and then after 100 it changes again to being less time, you know, in that exposure. You know, we can also provide that good personal protective equipment, and then, you know, we could cool outside workers, you know, again, with misting type of equipment. We can help those people on the inside, you know, making sure that they have, you know, the right fluids to drink. And but we just need to be careful. We have to remember that although time is money in a lot of circumstances, people getting hurt can cost us a lot more money in the long run.
Dr. Pellegrino, we've talked a lot about what to do to prevent heat-related illnesses today, but for our listeners who maybe need access to some more resources, can you direct us to a place maybe online where they could gather some more information?
Sure. Let me just preface that, though. I think taking a first aid course, and I'm a little bit biased on this, but taking a first aid course that is scenario-based really can help you practice these tips. And so if you're doing workplace training, practice this and put it into action. So the information's out there. There's plenty of websites. I'd like to direct you to the redcross.org website. And if you just put in heat safety, there's several tips and links that will help get you to what you need to know. But really taking the time to practice, whether it's in your workplace or taking a community-based first aid course, will help you put these principles in mind, because again, prevention is key, and then early identification is going to be the next best step, and then knowing what to do. So yeah, you can remember, oh, water, you know, cold water immersion, but where are we going to find that cold water?
Yep.
You know, what's in our first aid kit? Do we have these little chemical ice packs that expired 12 years ago? this is a culture of safety that we really want to promote.
Wonderful. Well, we thank you so much for coming on the show today. I know I've learned a lot.
Yes,
Craig,
me too.
I hope that you learned that you don't need to be in a bikini doing yard work. I hope that you picked that up.
No, I learned I get a kiddie pool and Doritos if I run a marathon. That's kind of awesome.
And a lot of rest.
Exactly. Dr. Pellegrino, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We truly appreciate having you on.
It's been a true pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Catherine, as Dr. Pellegrino said, prepare, prepare, prepare.
Prevention is a reoccurring theme here on Safe and Sound.
Yes, it is. And it's great advice.
Wonderful advice, because preparation and prevention can help to mitigate and alleviate a lot of the factors of heat-related illness. And if you can prevent it, why not take those extra steps to do so?
I will tell you this, though. Dr. Pellegrino did inspire me to run a marathon, because I found out you can swim in a kiddie pool and get Doritos. That's kind of awesome. If you threw Uncrustables in there, I'd be all in.
I don't even know how to react to that statement right now. So, folks, the next show, how to recover from a marathon if you're training by eating Doritos.
It sounds like a great idea. But, folks, please check out our friends at the Red Cross.
Yes.
At www.redcross.org, and check out their heat-related illness and their heat safety fact sheets.
There are also a couple others.
Yes, our good friends at NIOSH. They have some fact sheets as well. And our good friends at OSHA. They have a campaign that they just started about heat-related illness.
Exactly. Those three organizations have heat-related illness and heat stress information. And what you're going to find on those three websites is a lot of consumer-friendly information. So maybe you don't have the technical savvy to go through and be to go through the safety planner side. But they definitely have some information that's even good on a consumer base.
And I can't stress it enough. It's not as simple as just drink water. There's a lot to it. Be prepared out there, and it's preventable. So you can prevent heat stress, heat-related illness. Please do so, and be safe out there.
Be safe and stay cool.
If you do have any questions for our guests, if you have any questions for the show, if you would like to be a part of the show, Or you just want to say hello to Catherine and I.
Or Sveki for our Latvian friends.
Yes, we are a global organization. You can email the show at our show email address, which is safeandsound@aiha.org. That's
SAFEANDSOUND @aiha.org.
Thank you for listening.
And we'll talk to you soon.
This episode is brought to you by AIHA Publications. Tired of lugging around heavy reference books? All of AIHA's best-selling publications are now available for purchase in PDF format, offering a convenient way to view, search, bookmark, and comment on publications directly from your computer or mobile device. Visit AIHA.org/PDFPubs for more information.